Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution and 2026. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And we wrote along with our colleague, Stephen Slate, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap.
Before we get to a very serious topic, we're going to talk about a really, really serious topic. I just want to remind you of our mobile app, which you can get with the QR code that you can see right there. Other way. That way.
Because we're backwards. I do that every time wrong.
or you can go to thefreedommodel.org, and it's right on one of the tabs is mobile app, and it's free. And our free eBooks are there. There is an eBook for substance users, which is an abridged version of our book. And there's also an eBook for families. And that's the segue into what we're going to talk about today. The eBook for families gives you a completely different perspective on how you can help someone you love who may be struggling.
Yeah. In the next podcast, we're going to talk about some changes we're making to the coaching program. So stay tuned for
good
that.
Good changes. Yeah. Exciting changes.
Yeah. Very yeah. exciting. And today's topic is one that is talked about a lot in the last few weeks, which is Nick Reiner and the double homicide of his parents, Rob and Michelle. And this is probably sort of hit from every angle out in the blogosphere, but we're going to hit it from a completely different angle, I think, than what everybody else is talking about.
Yeah. You know, we've spent the last few weeks kind of watching as the news comes out about it, because nobody really knows what happened. The one person that knows isn't saying anything. Obviously he lawyered up pretty quickly, and I would too. But there's so much speculation. And I think one of the things that hit me first about the speculation that I found incredibly offensive and really terrible was this position of, well, you know, he is a drug addict, and, you know, almost like to say drug addicts kill their parents and they don't.
Or that it's justified in some strange way because he is one. Right.
Right. Right. And so right off the rip, I thought, wow, that is so if you want to know what people think about substance users, by and large, that's all you have to do is watch the mainstream media, and they will show you what they think. Okay. Or what the vast majority of people think. And, you know, and then in the weeks that have followed, the speculation is gone in different directions, and everybody's kind of thrown their hat in the ring of what they think happened and what they think went wrong. And so, you know, I have an article here that I pulled out of slate.com, and, you know, where it's the harm reduction crowd is chiming in that, you know, he didn't have, you know, easy enough or good enough access to, you know, maintenance medications. And then I see that he also had, you know, schizophrenia, mental health diagnosis. Some people are blaming that for what happened. And the thing about mental health and substance use, it's very confusing. Many people are speculating that it was meth psychosis, and certainly heavy meth use and lack of sleep. So it's not the meth, but lack of sleep can create delusions.
Oh yeah.
And and give you psychotic symptoms. But by and large, I want to make something abundantly clear. We don't know what happened.
Yeah. So this here's the one fact we know is that nearly everybody agrees, with the exception of Michelle and I and maybe some others, that he was an addict. Right.
Yes.
This is sort of if we start with the premise, and it's a false premise, that he was an addict that was out of control with substance use. That starts a train of logic, and I've said this for 3 decades. It starts a downstream effect of other mythology. So if you believe that you're an addict or somebody else is an addict, that means you believe they are out of control of their substance use. That's the definition of an addict in that conventional definition. Obviously, the contention of the freedom model is that addiction as a compelled behavior or an out of control state does not actually exist in an objective reality, because it doesn't. Nobody does things beyond what their wants are.
Yep.
And so
not even drunk or high.
That's right. So people say, well, did he want to kill his parents? Obviously, at that moment, he did, because that's what happened.
If that's what happened.
If that's what
happened. That's alleged, right?
Right. It's alleged, right. So we'll be precise in our talk. Yeah. And so, but here's the deal from the reports, and we looked through a lot of different reports and articles. He went to either anywhere between 2 and 18 rehabs. The general consensus was he didn't have the right amount or enough treatment.
Right.
And I say to myself, if your contention is that he's out of control, we're starting with a myth. So every solution to that mythology becomes problematic and can only harm the people himself and the people around him, because there's no solution when you're battling a straw man or swinging at windmills. And so what happens is what happened to me. It's what happened to Michelle. It's what happens to people we work with every day. And that is, you go to treatment being called this person who's out of control, when deep down in your heart, you know you're not out of control. Now, if he is truly schizophrenic, that's a different conversation. But here's what happens. The addict conversation gets melded and conflated into the mental illness world, which then gets conflated into this world of schizophrenia, and it becomes a really, really, really misunderstood soup.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that soup is what is sort of spilling out there. Now, as far as I know, right now, they're going to use the insanity defense. I don't know if that's still the case. That was the last thing I read, is that he was schizophrenic and he was basically crazy and couldn't stop himself. So I guess we'll see where that goes.
Well, what I want this to be, this episode, is I want to speak directly to parents of teenagers. Okay. That's one of the things I want to talk about, because his first rehab, he was 15 years old.
Yeah.
And who knows? At 15, you know, what would prompt something like that? But clearly, they became concerned when they, you know, caught him using drugs or doing things that I hate to say, that 15-year-olds do. Okay. When you look at the data, by and large, kids experiment with all kinds of things, drugs, sex, gambling, all kinds of things throughout their teen years, things they see their parents doing in a lot of cases. And there's what we talk about in the freedom model is the playground effect. And so whether you catch your 15-year-old drinking, getting drunk, smoking weed, doing pills, doing, you know, cocaine or
heroin,
methamphetamine, whatever you catch your 15-year-old doing, there can be this massive overreaction. And I know there's some parents saying, are you kidding me? kids are dying, right? Yes, but not at the levels you would think. You know, we had kind of the same overreaction with respect to when kidnappings, media mm-hmm. inflates mm-hmm. everything. So all That's of right. a sudden, parents of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds are not letting their kids go ride their bikes in the neighborhood because a girl in a state, you know, 1,000 miles away was kidnapped while riding her bicycle. The same thing happens here. You may even learn of a 16-year-old in your immediate community or a community around you that overdosed and died. And instantly you get this filled with this dread and fear and panic. And the moment that you see your kid using anything, you can have that visceral overreaction. Oh my God, my kid's got to go to therapy. My kid's got to get put in rehab. And I can tell you with utmost certainty that if you take a 15-year-old that's smoking pot or doing pills or whatever, and you bring them to get an evaluation at a rehab, they're going to tell you they need treatment. Okay? And I can tell you they don't. With utmost certainty. They don't need treatment. They need communication. They need good information.
Right.
They need to understand that they're not out of control. The very worst thing you can do with a 15-year-old is stick them in rehab.
And I think it's really important to know, Michelle started off talking about this, like when fentanyl came on the scene, if you look at the trends with drugs and overdose rates, they were very stable. And for the first time, it wasn't stable. It skyrocketed.
That's right.
And it went up. And that was a scary time.
Terrifying.
And I think that...
And he was 15 during that. During the beginning of that. He was probably what? If he was born in 93, he was 15, like 2008, 2009, around that time.
Yeah, fentanyl wasn't on the scene at that point, but heroin was increasing and the methamphetamine scare had just happened. I think the point is that it's easy to get caught up in fear, whether it's justified or not. There's the fentanyl issue was an anomaly in the history of drugs only because it flooded into the country and it was extremely powerful physically and it was new.
It was new. It was a surprise. Right. It was, you know, drugs that people understood and knew how to use had something else in them that they didn't know about.
And the chemists or the amateur chemists that were dealers a lot of times were killing their own customers. So that has since stabled out, right? It's the trends are going down with overdose rates and things like that. And people have figured out how to use
test strips right, that you can get online.
Fentanyl test strips. And they figured out how to navigate through that world as always happens with drugs. Now, so we're not saying that there's not scary times, but what we are saying is that if you have a 15-year-old, the question becomes, Is the fear justified statistically? It's important to know your facts, and parents don't know the facts, so they end up stuffing them in a rehab where these narratives of fear and terror and pushing people into coerced abstinence based in fear as the motive becomes the MO of the treatment center. Unfortunately, none of that works.
Well, and it also adds something to the mix, and that is, it pits parents against their children, okay? And this battle for control. And yes, do some kids get stuck in rehab and everything works out? Sure. And that happens. Of course it happens, to the tune of about 5 to 10%. Do sometimes people get stuck in rehabs and then 10 years later they grow out of it? Yep, that happens too.
Many times
that happens. The vast majority of people outgrow their heavy substance use. That's just the way, that's statistically true. Whether they've been to rehab or not, that is statistically true. People outgrow it. But there is a rehab pits parents against children. It creates a distrust. It creates a controlling relationship. It does not engender positive relationships, positive communication. It can become very adversarial. And then that power struggle at a time when there's a natural power struggle anyways.
Right.
Because right. adolescents are trying to come into their own and figure things out.
Well, I want to talk about that. So this doesn't give any real salve to the situation for parents, but the era from probably 12, 13 to 25 is a brutal time statistically for human beings in general.
Yeah.
So you have a time in people's lives that's really volatile, because as you become an adult without really the exercise skill set to be one, you're just kind of winging it. And then you add in experimenting with various things, gaining your independence, maybe through drugging and drinking and just crazy behaviors. It's pretty hard to ride that wave with your children and ride it out and not freak out. The answer for parents is to become well-read, read the Freedom Model. I would definitely suggest that. Read
it. Absolutely.
Because you'll get the facts that are real. And the reality is human beings are very resilient. And I think statistically, when you start to look at the numbers and you start to say, you can sleep easier at night knowing, oh, the odds are well in my favor that my son or daughter is going to get through this. And if I don't freak out and if I don't get some third party that has a vested interest in my pocketbook by capturing my kid in their facility or treatment program, I probably have a better chance, if I don't get caught in that system, of figuring this out with my kid, because I know my kid better than some counselor who meets them for 5 minutes, does an evaluation and says they're an addict for life. Really? I mean, can you imagine if you took somebody into some person with a 2-year degree and they were in charge of deciding whether you had cancer or not, a progressive illness? You would never do that. And then stick them away in some place and get chemotherapy when nobody really knows if that's true or not, you know? So that's what we're doing with kids. And then when the kid rebels and says, this is fucking nutty.
Yeah.
Like,
None of this makes any sense. I'm not out of control.
Yeah, I don't have a disease. I get high exactly when I want to get high. And I'm going to play this game, I guess, that I'm out of control if it suits me, if it benefits me. So sure, I'll go along with the charade. But as soon as I'm out of your sight, I'm going to go get high because that's what I want to do. And then what is the treatment center? Oh, it wasn't enough treatment.
Right. You need more treatment.
And that is where it seems that Nick Reiner and his parents got caught in that trap. That's why we call it the recovery trap. Make no mistake. We were in the trap. I was in it. She was in it. We were all in it. And in the end, it was nuts. None of it made sense.
No. And it, when you're the substance user, I can tell you from that point of view, when the interventions start and your parents seem like enemies, even if you didn't have a close relationship, because I didn't have a real close relationship with my parents, even growing up, they had their own lives. We were Gen X, you know, we were kind of the forgotten generation, but Nick Reiner grew up at a time when parents were kind of helicoptery, and, you know, that was the next generation after ours. And it's not better. It's, When a parent takes care of everything for you and is overbearing and they give you a vote of no confidence, like they think that you are incapable of doing basic life things. So that's not better. Okay. And so when you take these relationships and you pit people against one another, even if it's for their own good, right? Like when the intervention started with me, it was, you know, in the therapy and all that, it's for your own good. But it doesn't resonate. It starts a cognitive dissonance with you as the substance user in your own mind that's to such an extreme that you really do begin to feel like you're crazy.
Oh, you most certainly do.
Yeah.
And And then if you add in the case of Nick, you know, there's, I don't know how much of this is fact. So if it isn't fact, we can discount it. But this happens to a lot of people because we deal with it.
Yeah.
If you add in, you know, maybe a month or two of getting high on meth, and then you have 3 or 4 weeks where you're not on meth, but you're crazy.
Right. That, you haven't slept, or your
biochemistry is so whacked from lack of sleep, lack of nutrition and dehydration, plus the drug itself, the speed in your brain tissue, and you're just not processing well, and you think crazy shit.
Yep.
Right. So you have this psychosis, which easily with lack of information as to what's going on or lack of expertise can be then misdiagnosed as schizophrenia, which, by the way, nobody really knows how to deal with. You know, there's all kinds of drugs that they put people on. Some work, some don't.
Some people respond well to them. Some people respond terribly to them.
So then you stack on that they're an addict. And then the person is saying to themselves, am I crazy? Or is it the drugs? Is it me? Maybe I'm defective. Maybe I was an addict from birth. I mean, there's all this weird shit that people start saying. And then now we're down the road where we have physical protocols. We have nurses and doctors and psychiatrists and therapists and rehab facilities and outpatient clinics. And now harm reduction sort of has a war against those people, when harm reduction is the disease concept in different clothes. It's assuming that the best you're ever going to do in a life is reduce the harm that somebody's doing to themselves.
Right. It's assuming they're never going to not want to be high.
So how is that different? How is that different? It's not different. And I called that, you know, 10 years ago when this whole movement started, I said, this is no different. These drugs are going to become just like the pharmaceutical drugs for other mental disorders that don't work. And so we're going to watch people go down this whole plane that, well, the best you're going to do as a heroin user is be on lifetime Suboxone or methadone. You know, go to your clinic. Instead of going to the dealer, now you're going to your clinic. It's no different. Now, they may not die. But we're finding now, if you look at the meta-analysis of Suboxone in communities, Stephen Slate and I were just talking about this. There's several people that are doing these meta-analysis, and we're finding, oh, guess what? The communities where Suboxone and methadone clinics have been for more than a decade, the death rates are the same or worse.
Yeah.
So it ends up in the same pool, because the idea, the premise of all these problems is that the human being is incapable of controlling themselves.
Yeah. So but they're not choosing.
Right. So if that's what we tackled in this book, that's what we tackle. We tackle the fact that humans do what they want to do. And if we work with people on the assumption that they're doing heroin because that's something they prefer at that time, now we're having a conversation based in fact.
Yeah.
It's not confrontational. It's not judgmental. It's, why do you like this experience? Explain it to me, and then let's challenge it. Let's challenge that belief. And that works.
Yeah. I mean, if you can imagine, right, you're 15 years old, and I can imagine this because I was. You're 15 years old. You've kind of discovered booze and weed. And it, in your mind, it transports you to this different world. You become this different person. Maybe you were kind of a good girl, goody two shoes for a little while. And so you have that role you're playing as a good student, as an athlete, as all these things. And then you have this other world where you feel really cool and special, and like getting high feels amazing. And then you're plucked out, like somebody catches you, right? And so you have this world where you're a highly functioning individual, and they see you for a moment. Somebody, that a parent or whatever, catches you high or drunk, sticks you in a rehab, right? And now you're getting, okay, your dad was an alcoholic and an addict. You're an alcoholic and an addict. Oh, and by the way, you also have bipolar disorder. Because when you get out of the treatment that you're doing, and now you have labels, right? And now you have to watch for triggers, and you're going to these strange meetings where, oh, by the way, if you're a young person in these meetings, you have older people preying on you sexually. Okay. That's very common. So that's something you should know too. So you have these older people preying on you and saying, come with me. I'll take you and we'll get you some dinner. And, oh, maybe I can be your sponsor. And let me even go there. But so now you're in this strange world where you were, and the highly functioning part of you is no longer doing that. Because you're taking on these labels, you're taking on these identities.
Right. You've taken on the identity of a fragile,
sick person, because you were doing things. And I can remember thinking this way. I remember thinking, all these other people I was partying with are still partying. Yeah. Right. And then as we all grew up and I took on this addict identity, was going to meetings, was doing all these things, these people grew up and got on with their lives. And some of them were doing drugs heavier than I was. They were drinking heavier than I was, and they just grew out of it.
And they were successful, and you're stuck in this cult-like world.
Yeah.
And your life isn't moving forward at the rate you want it to. This is what I experienced. And then
you start to really believe you're mentally ill.
Yeah. And then you're questioning everything because the premise is wrong.
Yes.
I was never out of control.
Nope.
So I'm not going to say, I don't know Nick Reiner.
We don't know him.
I don't know.
I just know Robin Michelle.
I just know that it's precipitating it's creating this conversation where we have to ask ourselves, how does somebody get there?
Yeah.
And maybe we should question not him, but what was the information he was receiving and what were his beliefs at the time when he committed these or allegedly committed these crimes, and what was going on at that time from the perspective of this kid, well, in this case, man, now this man got a tremendous amount of misinformation. And then started down this strange path. We should be asking these questions. If it was, in fact, more than a dozen rehabs, why would we be sending them to more when it's obviously not working and it's just getting worse, obviously worse?
It kind of comes from the premise of control, right? We as parents, and Mark and I's children are grown and they have families of their own now. But we as parents, it's scary to watch your kids struggle with anything, no matter how old they are.
It is. Yeah.
And especially things that can, end their life, accidentally or even intentionally. Like if you have a kid that has struggled with depression or anxiety and you see them, it is scary. I get it. But at the same time, when I see things like that, I have to remember that I've made it through those struggles, those exact same struggles I made it through. And I did it with misinformation, right? So I have to remember that humans are so incredibly resilient. We're built that way on purpose. And that my children are capable.
Yeah.
And if you come at it with a premise of they're not out of control, they're completely capable, why don't I get curious about what's going on with them and have a conversation that is non-judgmental, that is informative, but in a way, I read a great book called Nonviolent Communication years and years ago, and it helped me write the family book. And approaching people from a position of, I don't know what's best for you.
Yeah.
Even as a parent.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what's best for you. And I can hear parents now saying, well, of course, doing drugs is not best for my children. Well, how about you approach it from the position of, I don't know that.
Well, obviously that person thinks it is.
Right.
So if we're going to come at it, so see where the loss of control mythology becomes so problematic. If you're a parent and you believe they're out of control, well, then you have to control them.
Yes.
Because that person has no control. So we got to find all the entities and the right mixture of drugs and antidepressant medication and therapy and recovery to, you know, and come at it from that angle to gain control over this person's actions and behaviors. Or, wait a minute, maybe my son and daughter is doing this because they see value in that experience. I want you to listen to this.
Yes.
So they value this experience at some level. They don't value overdosing. I'm sure they, you know, these are the ugly consequences of recreational drugs, right? So we get that. But on the front end, they're choosing this. Why don't I find out why? What do you like about this? What is the reasoning behind it? Then read the Freedom Model, because we cover all of this in the book, because
we
lived it.
Or the Freedom Model for the Family is shorter.
Yep.
Has great information.
Yeah, I don't have a copy here. No. But come at it from a perspective of, I should probably find out why my son or daughter prefers this lifestyle. And what is it they're trying to wrest out of that experience? What are they trying to pull out of that experience? And if you were to ask them that, you're probably going to get a little bit of bullshit coupled with the truth until they realize, are my parents for real? Are they really asking me this? And if you can let go of your judgment for a moment, it's hard to do, by the way.
It is hard to do. We've done it.
We've done this with all of our children at one time or another, with various things. And all of a sudden, you start having a productive conversation. And then if you read the Freedom Model, you'll have the facts about things. You can lower the temperature, lower the fear factor. And we do this with coaching all the time.
All the time.
With parents, with families. And we say, did you know that your son or daughter is going to be okay? That the odds are well in their favor to do that. Let me go over the statistics with you. And parents are blown away. They're like, I didn't know that. I heard that my son's going to be an addict and they're destined to overdose. And I go, yeah, because it's in the rehab's best interest to fear
to
you and to pay.
You.
And then keep them there. And then that self-fulfilling nightmare begins. The recovery trap is formed. So it's a completely different. So I wish that Nick had received. I don't know. Maybe he did receive something like that. Probably not if they pushed him into more than a dozen rehabs.
Yeah.
You know, at that point they're like, you know, you haven't found the right mix of recovery.
Right.
And recovery, there's nothing to recover from because there's no disease, because there's no out of control behavior.
Right. There's just preferences. There's just activities people see tremendous value, usually often overinflated value in doing. And the only way that people solve their problem is by changing their mind.
And it doesn't matter if they're in rehab in AA or not.
Right.
Everybody has to have a change of mind in order to change their behavior. And once you understand that, once you really understand that as a parent, your whole perspective will change. The fear will lower and you go, oh, this is a workable situation. I just need help understanding how not to be judgmental, how not to be scared. Well, read the book. You'll read what the stats are. And you'll realize that it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So look at, you can find our books, both the Freedom Model for Addictions and the Freedom Model for the Family on Amazon. You can also find them on our website. You can even purchase our audiobook of the Freedom Model for Addictions on thefreedommodel.org. And I highly recommend, look at, if you've got a half hour or an hour drive to work every morning, get the audiobook and just start listening to it. It will be...
It'll blow your mind.
It'll totally blow your mind. And there's not too many books. The book is now, you know, we're coming into its ninth year. And it's just as relevant and helpful today as it was when we released it in 2017.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's still selling at the same rate every day. Every day. People all around the world are finding this totally empowering. So...
And look, if your kid is, if you are in that position where now you're 10, 15, 20 years down this treatment road with an adult child, it's not too late to try and shift that relationship from manipulation and controlling to something that'll be more helpful and also bring you rebuild your relationship with this person. We have helped people do that, rebuild relationships with their adult children that have been damaged through the, you know, coerced treatment, tough love, and all that stuff. So we're really good at that stuff, at helping with those things. So all is not lost. While everybody's still on this planet, while everybody's still breathing, there's always hope.
That's right. So get the app, because the app with that QR code has all the information you need in it. It has all the samples of all the
different
various
videos from our and we're also going to be making, and we're going to do this this week, the online program, the Freedom Model for the Family online program is going to become available through the app. So you can purchase that individually. Mm-hmm. We want to make that available to families. So if you're in that situation, you don't know what to do, you're at your wit's end with your kid, this is a nice private way for you to learn the Freedom Model for the Family, understand the Freedom Model, and understand more effective ways to guide and, you know, your loved one to a solution.
Yep.
All right. If you want to talk with us, you want to set up a free private consultation with us, you can call us at 888-424-2626. If you are interested in becoming a part of the solution, a part of our movement to shift treatment to something that actually, not treatment, but shift the addiction help model to something that actually helps people, brings families together, helps people to shift their preferences, change their mind, solve their problem. Go to thefreedommodel.org, look at coaching certification. And like Mark said, we're going to be talking more about in the weeks to come. We're going to be setting up some new free live events here in the next few weeks. We're going to be talking about what we're doing to help our brand new certified coaches. You're going to see shortly, we're going to start featuring them on our podcast. You know, how we're going to help make our model the standard addiction help model in the world.
That's right.
Bye, everyone. See you next time, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.